I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi guys, this is Heavy Metal Tones here, and I'm on holiday at the moment for Christmas, as we all should be, I think, if we can. So this week's episode is going to be a classic episode. It's the Black Sabbath Headless Cross episode, one that really did well in the audiences. They really loved it, so I thought, why not this bring it out again for this time of year? So I will be back next week. That's in the new year, with, as promised, two episodes back to back that are going to be crackers, and I'm really excited about that. But right now you're going to hear Old Tone talking about Black Sabbath's Headless Cross. Enjoy. Welcome, guys, to this week's episode of Heavy Metal Tones with me, your podcast host, Tony Evans. Sorry if I'm a bit all over the place today. I've moved my room around a bit, sort of setting up the music room and things on in the same spot. I've got to reach behind me to get my tea. Oh, and my cable's all over the place. Anyway, that aside, firstly, I just want to start with a moment of sad reflection for the Queen. Now, I know this may not be, this goes to all corners of the world, and not everyone is a loyalist like me. But I just want to say that here at Heavy Metal Tones, we'd like to send our respects to the grieving family of her Queen and her children and her subjects, such as myself, and just to say that we will miss her. I have been very sad the last couple of days. I cried a lot, and I felt like I'd lost a family member. I know that's not really rock and roll, man, but I just want to let you know, just how if this week's episode feels a little bit somber, it's not meant to be. It might just be me being a bit melancholic, there is a cream for that, I believe, but I can't afford that right now. Anyway, I thought melancholic was a vegetable, but anyway, no, stop it. Have some tea, hang on. Now that my respects have been paid, I'm actually drinking my tea from a mug with Queen on it. A friend of mine bought me, on the day of her passing, bought me a Queen mug. Couldn't get me one with the Queen, but got me one with a Bang Queen, which is equally as lovely, isn't it not? Yes. So, this week's episode, let's get this a little bit more out of the sadness and into the light, shall we? And so we say God Save the King as well, I should say. This week's episode is one of my favourite albums of all time. Possibly up there in the top five. Although my top fives do change, of course, because we're not dead yet, are we? We haven't heard everything yet. Headless Cross by Black Sabbath. This is obviously the third week in our mini-series of the Black Sabbath era albums. We've done Ozzy, we've done Dio, and we're now about to do Tony Martin. A reflection back to the Dio one. I got some really good feedback on it. Yes, I was a little bit negative towards some of the songs, but and it's not my nature to do so. But as I've said, I feel I have to be truthful about that. And I did want to do the easy point the finger and do the easy heaven and hell, because you could just eulogize about. This way, as I said, this week's episode is my era. This, I would call this, is the Tony Heavens era Sabbath album. You've got a picture. I've said this before on the podcast a few times. I was 17. I had one of my very first pay packets. I took a bus and a train right across town from my little house in Hendon up to Hammersmith. And I went into the Hammersmith Odeon, you know, it's an iconic venue. And I was buying at the time, actually, tickets for Fish's first tour on his solo album, Vigil in the Wilderness of Mirrors. And I had literally earned £50 for the week. And most of that had to go rent to my mum, bus train ticket for college, because I was at art college, and you know, food and living, because mum didn't buy me food, and so it wasn't much money, and I went with my £20 I had put aside for me for the week, and in once I bought the £10 ticket to see Fish, and I looked across, and at the poster to the side of the checking the ticket buying window. Yes, people, in this world of instant gratification, we had to go to the venue to buy the tickets. You had to point where you wanted to sit, and they would say, "Yeah, we can do that," and that was his cost. Now, I had to get nosebleed seats because I couldn't afford the front, and I couldn't afford any of the lower tiers. So I was right at the back, and the ticket was £10.50. 50p tax, I think it was, and I turned around, and there was that black and white poster of Headless Cross, and it was April, I believe, when I for that gig was April 89, and April 1990, I apologize, and I bought that ticket. I went, oh my god, I turned back around and said, how much is this, because I'd only just bought the album and the single Headless Cross. And I've been listening to it, like, but I didn't know they were touring. This is pre-internet, people. You know, we had to sort of listen to the grapevine. If someone was banging a rock somewhere, I'd hear the note. You know, it's like jungle drums. You know, that kind of thing. And I couldn't afford to keep buying Kerrang and stuff. So when I bought like Melody Maker or Kerrang, it was usually like an old one, or I got it from a mate, or they found it on a train or whatever you did. Like we did with our pornography, you know, we found on a train station platform. Anyway, I said, right, how much is that? And I think it was something like, I got like the cheap tickets, it was £8. So I had £1.50 left to my name for the week. And that was like the Wednesday. So I wasn't getting paid till the following Thursday. I remember when I told my dad if he could lend me a fiver, he was furious and told me not to stop wasting my money, and many people since then have said the same thing to me, and I replied with a double digit, and I blew a raspberry and I left the room. I won't do a raspberry because it'll hurt your ears. Anyway, so that's me, that's why this is my era. And there's also another funny story about it. So I've got the ticket. I got off early for work that day because I used to work the nights, and I got the night off, and I got my brand new leather jacket on that I'd scrimped and scraped for. It was a brand new leather jacket, so it was one of those, you know, I always felt a bit out of place, because for me, gig jackets should be worn and old, and brand new is a bit... I'd worn it at Donington the previous year, just when... I think it was White Snake were headlining. Yeah. Anyway, I had my brand new leather jacket. I had I think the t-shirt I was wearing at the time was very uncool. I was wearing, I think it probably was a White Snake shirt. I can't remember. No, I should tell you what it was. It was Love in an Elevator from Aerosmith. I had that t-shirt. Why I had the t-shirt, I don't know. I think I got it at Donington. Anyway, I went there, got queued up, got in. I had drunk a fuckload of Coke. Like, I couldn't drink alcohol, I was too young, right? So I was drinking loads of Coke. And I drank like loads of chocolate peanut M&Ms. I remember a big, big bag of them. Because it was in the foyer there. Because the sport band weren't my... sort of was not really interested in the sport band. So I was just eating and drinking and chatting to people. And I went up into the gods and, yeah, I headbanged like there was... going out of fashion, man. And I was feeling really off, and I rushed off to the toilets. Literally, they were behind me, two rows back against the wall with the toilets near the exits, and I was vomiting into a urinal, very classy, of course. And this guy with he was all clad in denim, never forget it, he's probably dead now. He was really old, and he could pat me on the back, and he's going, "Oh man, the drugs, man, it's the drugs." And I couldn't turn around and say, "Yeah, no, it's a chocolate peanut M&Ms." I had to say it was the drugs. I'm like, "Yeah, man, the beer and the drugs." And I, because I looked like 15, yeah, and I hastily rushed back to my seat when on comes Brian May, and he sings. He comes on and does the encore when Death Calls, I think it is, and then on. And Geezer comes on as well. It was crazy, absolutely crazy. I almost missed it if I'd been head down in the toilet any longer. So, you know, I did. So I can say in my life I've got to see Brian May play live. Yes, it was with Black Sabbath, but you know, crazy time. And I remember, I'd bought a Black Sabbath shirt. No, I hadn't. No, I didn't buy a Black Sabbath shirt. I had a couple of quid that I scrounged, and I got a tour program, which you don't get those anymore. Although when we saw Sabbath last, there was a tour program. I think it might be a Sabbathy thing. Same happened when I went the following year to see them on the TYR in the tier tour as well. So just putting my tea down. I've just reached across. So the album itself, recorded in August and November 1988. It's 40 minutes and 13 seconds long. It was recorded at the Sound Mills in Leeds, Woodcrest Studios in Berkshire, and Amazon Studio in Liverpool. It's their 14th studio album, released on the 24th of April 1989. Tony Martin's second album with the band. Now, if anyone knows their Sabbath history, Eternal Idol was their first one with Martin. Now, I love that album so very much, but I'm not going to talk about the album right now because as I've done with this era of this mini series, I've sort of picked albums that people wouldn't choose. Now, this is a slightly different story because it's my favorite album and it's Tony Martin, and I'm going to do this one. You know, people do say that Tear is a better album. I've heard people say that Eternal Idol is a better album. I actually think this is their best album, period, outside of Ozzy, and that's a big call with someone like Heaven and Hell, but this is just, like, because it rings the bells with me, guys. I think it reignites 16-year-old Tony's love for heavy music and guitar-based music. It really does. It was recorded on Miles Copeland's label, IRS. That's Stuart Copeland's brother's label. They had been in negotiations with different record labels. Sad thing about this, unfortunately, guys, is this and Tear, both recording on IRS. And IRS are no longer viable, obviously, for some time now. And there's no reissues. There has been a reissue of it on anything. It's not on any streaming platform. It's not on any... it's not being reissued yet. Although, Tony, I interviewed Tony Martin, one of my lifetime achievements. Please, if you do want to listen to that or watch the interview, go to Metal Ruse. I'll put a link below for it, and see me chat with Tony. And he says that there are negotiations. The trouble is that because Ozzy and his wife, I said that loosely, his wife, because she and he control the Sabbath label name, It's not easy to get out and do, because he wants to, like, apparently Tony Martin was telling me that Tony Iommi called him up and said, look, hey, you know, we'd like to, it was at Jeff Nichols' funeral, I think it was. He said, I would like you to come and, you know, redo some more vocals for Tear and for Headless Cross, and we can reissue it. And Tony got really excited. Then he got a call back from Tony again and said, look, I'm sorry, I can't do it. Legal reasons. Which is a real shame, I think. It truly is. The lineup for this band, for this album, is Cozy Powell on drums, the legendary Cozy Powell. And to say I saw Cozy Powell play is another one of my life's experiences that I can't ever take away. Watching him doing the drum parts on NIB, for instance. As I told you last week, you know, like I said, you know, some drummers are open-shouldered and some are tight-shouldered. You know, there's that sort of marching sound, whereas some are splashy, jazzy sound. And Powell, really, he was open, very open across the kit, like very expressive and very expansive. A bit like Marco Miniman. We were watching a video about him the other day that John sent me. Amazing drummer, and he's sort of very open and expressive. Again, Nico McBrain is exactly the same. I think they're in that same feel. You know, they're raised in the UK, listening to the UK heavy rock bands like Badfinger and Bad Company and Free and Deep Purple. They're open and expressive, like Cream and so on. And he, Cozy, had played previously, if you don't know who he was, he played with the Michael Schenker group, Rainbow, and then Jeff Beck, and many others, of course. Then we had, Ozzy Geezer was wanting to join the band, and very excited by it, but he got a call to play with Ozzy on No Rest for the Wicked, and took that choice, I think. Which is fair enough, because No Rest for the Wicked is a absolutely cracker of an album. And if I ever do an Aussie miniseries, that will be one of them, I think. Tony had thrown the Iommi, that is. I'm going to call him Iommi now because there's too many Tonys in the band. Great name, Tony, by the way. You know, Iommi had asked to get Dio back in, thrown that weight around after Eternal Idol, and then Coverdale as well was asked. But once Tony had sort of rehearsed again with them, this is Martin, when Martin had rehearsed again with them, they realised, hey, we've got a band here that we don't need to fuck around with these names. We can sell this music on the basis of the quality of Tony, not on the name that the other two bring. The bass parts are played originally by Joe Burt from Eternal Idol, but he left, and then during recordings, and so Lawrence Cotty finished the album and featured on the title track and video, but not live. I saw it was the bass player played live was Neil Murray. It was weird, I have to say, turning up to see Sabbath with, I've consequently seen the four original lineup, but seeing Sabbath with the only original member being Tony Iommi was weird. And there was a part where the bass player Neil Murray, if anyone was there at that gig will remember, he did a bass solo. I think he sat down to play it. He had a red bass, long blonde curly hair, very 80s, very early 90s, sort of that bridge gap period. But brilliant bass player, and he's played on so much stuff. He's like a jazz blues bass player, and so he's got so many. He's such a gifted. His chops are so gifted. The album reached 31 in the UK charts. That was due to the fact that IRS didn't do their duty to the band and to the record. There's a story, a great story that Tony Iommi says that in Canada, in I think when I wrote Montreal, Toronto, and they were walking around record shops as you do, like looking for your album. I mean, I do the same. And no albums, couldn't find them anywhere. It had been out for 3 or 4 months, not in any stores, because they had mucked up the distribution. And the story goes that Iommi went into the distribution office of IRS in Canada. And now I can't imagine this, because Tony seems to be, even though he is a Brummy and a hardcore dude, he doesn't seem the kind of guy that would chin someone. But he says he was going to chin him. Now, for those that don't know what chinning means around the world, it's an English colloquialism to mean hit someone, hit them in the chin, smack them in the face. I used to use the word nut, so to headbutt someone, you know, give them a Glasgow kiss, you know, those sort of thing. Anyway, so that's why the album didn't do as well as it possibly could. It's the only album in the band's history to be 100% solely conceptually around the occult, devil worship. Now, I don't know whether that's Tony Martin's influence or reading the wind, as in this is the kind of album that people want to hear. Is it something that Iommi had been thinking about for some time? I think it's absolutely perfectly apt for Sabbath. Sometimes when Sabbath albums, you have these really good dark black themes, and then it goes off and becomes like a song about a hole in the sky, or you know what I mean, or God forbid, country girls, you know, that sort of thing. It becomes a little bit, it doesn't have, I know that they wrote the album concept, or the band concept, was because of Hammer horror movies and their love of horror movies and a bit of shock tactics, and no one else was doing it. But I like to say that I think that this is why I like this album so much. You know, I think it's because of those dark themes. Now, two album songs on the album had to be changed their names, because Ozzy had only just released two tracks on The Rest for the Wicked. Call of the Wind was originally called Hero. And you hear the lyric in it, it says Hero in the lyric. And Devil and Daughter was Devil's Daughter, which both those tracks off of Ozzy's album are, these days, I would say, get fucked. The English language is not something you can bandy around. Sorry, that was me reaching over my tea down. You can't say that one word on an album. I mean, it's almost preposterous, isn't it? It's like saying, telling the Beatles that they can't have Help on there because there's a song released on another album that's got Help written on it at the same time. And it's a lot of nonsense, really. But litigation is litigation, and Ozzy's wife is Ozzy's wife, and you don't go crossing that family. And they may have also done it out of, you know, okay, guys, sorry, we won't do that. I remember when Iron Maiden released an album at the same time as Marillion. Marillion had a single called Hooks in You. Iron Maiden had a song on the album called Hooks in You. And, you know, I know they're different genres, but you could possibly say something, couldn't you? Anyway. There's also only two tracks on the album that don't end in a slow fade. There's a weird little fact for you. And that for me is an odd fact. Why did I write that down? And these are those two tracks. So Call of the Wind and Devil and Daughter, the only two tracks that don't have a slow fade. All right. Well, that's for you music nerds out there that want to write that down in your book. Now, sadly, unless you've got a copy, the only place you can hear this is illegally on YouTube. So anyway, I can hear it. I don't actually have a copy of this anymore. I lost it years ago at a party in Hampstead, actually. North London, and it's very hard to get hold of. I mean, I can get copies at extortionate prices, and if eventually it doesn't get reissued, I'm going to have to do it. Anyone out there that's got a copy that wants to give it to me, please private message me on my Facebook page. I'll put the link below and let me know. I'm happy to pay postage. I'm also happy to buy a copy off of you at a reasonable price. I just want a copy on vinyl, even on CD, to be honest. Even on cassette, I just want a copy of it. Even 8-track, for fuck's sake, I'd take it on 8-track. I can't play it, but I just want to own a copy. Same with Tier as well. Every time I've gone to someone, especially who has them, I've asked them, they say, oh, I just sold one only recently. Then they might be saying that to piss me off. Probably not, I don't know. They may have just only just sold it. But those out there listening, in my big audience that I have, if you do have one and you'd like to donate it to the show, it would be very much appreciated. Anyway, I'm coming to the end of side one. The tea is deciding to go cold. I'm going to now do track by track. Now, you'll have to bear with me on this because I can't listen to it easily. So it's a lot of it's from memory. A lot of it's from a poor YouTube rip. Okay, so I'll see you on the other side, guys, and we'll chat about Headless Cross. Bye now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome back, guys, to side two of the Sabbath classic review of Headless Cross. So I am going to talk about the first track, the title track, the eponymous title track, Headless Cross. So sonically, the whole album is very much Tony Martin's footprint all over it. He does have a vocal styling very much like Dio, and I don't have an issue with that because I love Dio's voice. It's not Dio's voice I had a problem with the last album. It was his ego written all over the album. You don't get this with Headless Cross. It's very, very the first track. I mean, it's a single. It was the single off the album, It's very atmospheric. It has a very late 80s, early 90s drum sound. Opening up, it's almost like it's a electronic drum kit. It sounds like Cozy is tuned quite high on his toms, and so he sort of has that kind of really, really responsive snapback from the when he hits it. You can hear it. That it's almost a bit like, without sounding weird, it's a bit like the drum sound from Something Coming in the Air Tonight, Something in the Air Tonight by with Phil Collins. Doodum, 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 doodum. It has that sort of like that room sound. It's very filled. I don't know how Cozy recorded the album. He probably recorded it in the room, mic'd fully, like to get all the atmospheres, not individual pieces. Because I know that the trend for the time was to mic each drum piece, and then mic the room, and then gate them and mix them together. And I think you get that with this feel, this here. It really sort of, the song itself and the album itself really taps into my love of the occult and of paranormal and of the absurdities of religion and the satanic panic sort of thing, and it sort of really does with this Headless Cross first single. It's quite dramatic. I think it's Tony's. It really has Tony's. This is me. This is my album. Eternal Idol was great, but this is something I'm going to be really proud of. And you can always feel that he's got this sense of I've come of time, my place, you know, because Tony is the second longest vocalist outside of Ozzy for the band. Yet people don't talk about him. People put him aside. You know, they just go, oh, Ozzy, oh, Dio. And it, you know, to some extent, it really, really, and I'm going to be rude here, guys, fucks me off, right? It really is. Really, the guy's a multi-instrumentalist, by the way, guys. He plays bass, drums, keys, sings, he mixes, you know. Anyway, you know, flute, I mean, you name it, he can play it. And he can bloody sing. He's got pipes like probably the best set of pipes you'll ever hear, I reckon. You know, you could put them up there with the best. You know, you put them up with your Dickinsons and your Dios and your Halfords. You know, you really, you know, the riffage on this song is a bit. I think this album is the only downside I'm going to say to this album. We'll not get that in conclusion, but to this song is sometimes I feel it's riffage light. It's Iommi light. And I think it's the mixing, because some of the phrasing on Iommi's guitars are quite stodgy. They're quite laid back in the mix. Now that could be because for the last 20 years I've only ever listened to this album through a digital copy. I probably, once I get a decent vinyl print or a tape, I'll be able to give you that a better understanding. The way at the moment I listen sounds pretty thin to me. But he's back to his old self. It's Sabbath back Sabbath. I can't tell how exciting this is to me. Eternal Isle was an exciting album, but after things like Mob Rules and things like that, it's so good to have a colossal album. And this is a colossal album. And I think that's a great way of describing Sabbath to anyone who's never heard them. It's a colossal sound, you know. I think Jeff Nichols's keys feel the void, feel the space, add a swirling wind, a blasted heath, Macbeth, Hamlet, you know. Probably shouldn't say Macbeth on the podcast. I should do the Scottish play. You know, it fills those voids. And with Martin's ability to take a note, a vocal range, a phrase from zero to hero in a second, you know, just jumping up and soaring. It's brilliant. This is why this single. What a way to open an album. Open an album with your with one of your best songs. It's brave, you know, because you can either open it with a weaker song and then, you know, lull them in and then really smack them in the face three songs in, or you can finish on a very strong song. Well, I think that this is a great strong song to start with. To be honest, this album is, you know, yeah, I'm going to say this because it's my favorite album and I'm going to eulogize, but it's all killer, no filler. It really, really is. You know, doesn't hang around Headless Cross, great guitar solo, you know, great bass parts, Cozy's modernistic drum pattern comes in and then starts to thunder down like molten lava from a volcano, and you just, it rains over you and it sort of sits and fills the void. The air is full of smoke and sulfur. It just is amazing. And then we move. It's also got great sing-along. You know, this is another good thing about this album, is the sing-along stuff. It's really, really sing-along. Then we move to straight into another hard and heavy Devil and Daughter. Now, this song, and again, without having the lyrics, you see, this is very tough for me. I usually like to research the lyric and then sort of think about the lyric. I can know the lyrics inside and out, but I want to see them written down. I can do more thinking about it. But this feels like it's Hammer Horror. So Hammer House of Horror was a film school, a film production company in the 50s through to the late 70s and early 80s that made horror movies and started out making black and white sort of gangster movies and pirate movies and stuff. I actually did my silent movies originally. I did my O-level English exam on the dissertation on the rise and fall of Hammer Horror, Hammer Film Studios. And so it's quite important to me. And so when this song here reminds me or sounds like it's being inspired by the film To the Devil a Daughter, which was one of the later Hammer movies with Christopher Lee. It was like Hammer's version of Rosemary's Baby, basically. A little bit, if I'm going to be honest, actually better than Polanski's Rosemary's Baby. And Polanski's Rosemary's Baby is a classic, but this is a bit more crazy. It's a bit like Blood and Satan's Claw or something stupid like that. I have thought about doing a side podcast on horror movies. I might do it one day. And on British comedy, post-war British comedy, but, you know, can't keep doing all this stuff. It's quite thunderous. I think that Cozy Powell takes the lead on this out on this track. He sort of is mixed more forward. The guitar solo in this is quite magical. It's different. I think Tony's solos on this album are different to any other solos he's done on any other albums, possibly similar to Tear. They have this sort of, they're far away from the blues as he can probably get, but they're also not anywhere near a heavy metal guitar solo. You know what I mean? He's not coming in and going, right, I've got to do 8 million notes at the fastest speed I can, and I'm going to do all in these strange time signatures and strange, you know, keys and scales. I'm going to do it in E. I'm going to do it in F over major, E major over F or whatever. I'm going to do this E over D, E over G. I'm going to do this. And then and he knows where he lives, and where he lives, he controls like the emperor that he is. And I think, again, also, you know, Murray and Powell and all of them really sort of bring this. It's got a great vocal line. Martin's really knows how to draw you in, hold you, and then blow you away with a vocal line that just goes, wow, God, where did that come from? Has he got a pair of bellows up his bum or something? How do you get that kind of note up there? And so quickly, and with such, you know, okay, you know when some people can sing a high note and you can go from a low E to a high, whatever, I don't know about vocal notes, but going two or three octaves, it usually is quite thin and light, eerie. Tony does it with this thick vocal. It's almost like it's singing. I should have asked him. I didn't ask him in the interview. It's singing like at the... You can feel it's coming from the depths of his chest and from the back of his throat. And it's sort of deep, but it goes up the scales. It's really... Dio did it very, very well. And I think that's probably where Martin's getting his inspiration from. Although in the interview I had with Martin, he did say that when he was a lad, he was never really into Sabbath and stuff, even though he's from the same part of town. They're from Birmingham. You know, but it was funny how life takes you in these circles. To me, it's classic. It's got a classic heavy riffage in it. We do come back to a bit of heaviness on this particular song. And then we're going on to When Death Calls, which is, as I said before, is Heroes. Is that right? Did I make that? No, Call of the Wind, Wild as Heroes. When Death Calls. I've written in big red letters, at last, a breather. Because you... a breather is the word. It starts off with, you get nice, slow, quiet, pattering, sort of wind-swept stuff. It feels, pardon me, I'm going to cough right down the mic there. Sorry, guys, if I hurt your ears, sorry, man. And women, and ladies and children, and wherever you are and whatever you are. It's got the most, I've written here, Martin's most monastic vocal part. I don't know what I meant by that. I wrote that like at 2 a.m. when I couldn't sleep, and I was listening to the album, and I rolled over and wrote monastic. Reverential, I've written as well. Beautiful build-up to the chorus. And I think it's quite religious, actually, because it was When Death Calls. So it's about, I would say it's about being taken to your maker, about, you know, and very apt at the moment with the Queen. It's builds and is much quieter than the rest on the album. I've written, the solo is fantastic, very precise. It's very note perfect, very clean and brighter. But there's, you do get a chance to breathe in this song. You know, I put his Cozy Powers all over it again. Filling the voids, which a good drummer does. You know, a good drummer is either a good drummer, either you don't hear or you do. You know what I mean? It's, or you hear it, but you notice it only just. Sometimes a really bad drummer's, because they're off time or they're weak-willed or they're weak-wristed or, to them respects, poorly recorded, it can actually ruin an album. I've heard albums where the drumming's put me right off. And I think that's because I'm an ex-bass player and sort of frustrated drummer. And so, you know, I sort of, it's all about the rhythm for me. And some, if it's poorly done, whereas Cozy is a genius, God rest his soul. Died in a car accident and hit a tree racing home back to his country house. He was on the phone, and he shouldn't have been, lost control, on the phone to his wife, and hit a tree. You know, what is it about drummers? Keith Moon and him. What is it about drummers? You know, John Bonham. Anyway, that's When Death Calls. I think it's the shortest song on the album, but I think it's a nice breather in between before the next track comes along. You know, and I think you need that. You need a little bit of to and throwing. I just boo-booed there. There's a reason why the guitar solo is so precise and so wonderful on When Death Calls. It's because Brian May is playing on it. Oh, sorry, guys. I was just, you know, I did write that down, and I do know that. Oh, my God. Anyway, Tony Martin and Brian May on the one album, it's orgasmic, isn't it not? It just fills you with warm glow and go, oh my God, what the fucking hell is this going on? Yeah, so that's why the guitar solo is, it's not very Brian May-ish either, can I just say? You know, Brian May there's Queen fans out there, and I'm not a big Queen fan. I'm going to be brutally honest. I've said this before. I think they're a brilliant singles band. They're brilliant musicians. They make great music, and they're a wonderful, wonderful history in our music. And I adore their music. I just don't listen to their albums. But Brian May, what a cracking guitarist to be on, and to see him live, as I did, even though I was blurry eyed and smelling of vomit when I did. I was talking about the song and thinking, there's something about the song I haven't made a note of. And as you know, when I don't know if you know this, my process for the album, for this program, is to, I listen to the music if I'm listening to an album, and I make lots of notes. I just scribble, scribble, scribble. I do a history section, so I write all the notes about the recording, and then I just absolutely cock up a bit like that, because I just, my brain works too quickly. I've written it down that Brian May was on the album, and even said at the beginning he played on Deaf Calls, but then I got to the review of the song, I forgot to write it down. Anyway, so don't wave your finger at me. I apologise. I would rewind it. What's that? But it wouldn't work, would it? And I'm not deleting it and editing it, because that's just not me. So next song on the album really is going to be... Wow, man, I am so over this, aren't I? I'm all over this. I'm all over it, aren't I? Killing in the Spirit World. Now, Killing in the Spirit World... okay, sonically, this album sounds like one song. This is a clever thing about this album. It's so beautifully... It's like Tony and Cozy and Jeff and Murray and Martin, they all went together and went, let's make one album that sounds similar for 40 minutes. And you might go, oh my God, sounds similar for 40 minutes, I can't do that. But no, it is a delicious sound. It is a windswept Bodmin Moor, abandoned castle, derelict church sound, right? Without being like the black metal sounds of Norway. You know, so I love that. I love it very much. In fact, Mayhem are coming to tour Australia next year. I am going to get my ticket. But it has that sound. And this particular track, Killing in the Spirit World, is, I think, my second favorite song on the album. I think definitely. Because I think outside of Headless Cross, this is Martin's best vocal performance on the album. It's very dramatic. It's very atmospheric. It has an almost Odin-esque, pagan, and you know I don't like the word, ancient pre-religion feel to it. I think that's probably what it's based around. I have to say that I don't know without the album. It's very tricky, and no one's written, there's no reviews for what it's about. So it's a very Dark Ages album for me, very in the black void. It's got the best guitar solo on the album. I think Murray's bass part on it is the tightest. Powell's drumming is thunderous, and like I said, one of the best vocal points for Tony, really, really. And I wish I could read you the lyric, but I haven't even got it written down. I can't write it down, but this really hurts me that I can't do this. But it is a brilliant album. This is the opening track for side B. It's 5 minutes and 9 seconds long. All the songs on the album, I mean, the longest is When Death Calls at 6 minutes 56. Followed by Nightwing at 6 minutes 32. So they don't hang around, okay? It's a good length of a song. It's built well, you know, verse, chorus, intro, outro, guitar solo, drum bit, heavy vocal line. Everything you like about heavy rock and heavy metal that's in this song is there. And then we get Call of the Wild. Call of the Wild, or Heroes, as they wanted to call it, has the best sing-along vocal. It's very, you know, when I said that before that it's quite muddy in the mix, I think this is the least muddy of the mixes. I believe it was recorded, because it was recorded in four studios. This is the trouble, you record through four studios. I find, unless you're using the same desks, So anyone knows about recording, you know, the best desks are Neve desks, I think anyway. And if you've got, say, one studio like, you know, Amazon studio, the last studio I recorded in, didn't have a Neve desk, you know, the sound that comes through it is going to be different. And you take your master tapes there and you put them on and you try and blend it. But I think that the blend in the mix, once they sort of played around with Dobley, it got a little bit messy. And again, I don't know. I need to hear the original versions to see if that's the case. But this is the best solo on the album. It's got the best sing-along vocal line. The soaring vocal line for Martin on this is just, it's superb. It really is very, very, very awe-inspiring. See, on the end of this, what Tony Martin does really, really well. Sorry, my earphones fall out, so I'm only hearing mono. Das ist gut, now stereo. What you hear well with Martin is he ends his vocal line, his lyrical line, with a beautiful, elongated scale note, right? You know, I'm not even going to attempt to pretend to have to do it, but you know, when they go, you know, sorry, I mean, that's awful. There are cats running around now, plugging their ears, and it's put them off screwing. Anyway, what did someone say? My vocal line is like cat screwing. Hit the mic. So get my tea. So, you know, it's very hectic. I find this particular track. I find Call of the Wild hectic, hectic, hectic. But as I said, Tony has his ability to end that line and punch you in the face. Starts the lyric line, finishes it, bang. Starts again, bang, bang. It's just, I don't understand why he's not considered one of the greatest vocalists of all time. He really, really, and I know this is going to piss Dio fans off, but he's a better vocalist than Dio. I know I know he's different, but he's just got so much more range. Oh my god. Anyway, we then move into Black Moon. Now, Black Moon is originally recorded on the Eternal Idol album, Frantic. I think they needed to fill the album with this one. I like the lyric, I've got a black moon rising, and it's calling out my name. You know, it's sort of, that was not bad. Occasionally I can sing. And it really punctuates the occult feeling of the album. You know, a black moon, the devil is being born, rebirth of the devil. It's windy, it's dark, and I like. But it's great because it's easy listening Satanism, if you know what I mean. You know for well listeners that I really love the very, very dark liquid. Black syrupy thickness of dark black music. I really really do. And I'll be doing another new episode on that on Halloween coming up. But at the same time, I really, really like the way that this is a bit more entry level. It's like Maiden's Number of the Beast, isn't it? You know, it's like Priest's Nostradamus album, I think, a classic album, which is very much maligned, and I might even do that one day. Saw that played all the way through from beginning to end in Sydney, and it was just awestruck, awe-inspiring, okay? So, yeah, it's Frantic, lots of guitar stuff. It runs off the end of Eternal Idol, so that's coming off, it's their first foray with Martin, and so there's a lot of sort of franticness about it. It was a single off of Eternal Idol in 1987. So I think they just want to put another that did quite well, so they probably just want to chuck it in there again, maybe because they enjoyed it so much. And also it fits the narrative, I think. And then we get to the last song, Nightwing. What a way to end an album. This song has enough slow, rhythmic, headbanging music that you could ever want. It's got Martin's wonderful stretching of a note at the end of a vocal line. It's got you know, Tony's drop-tuned rhythms. It's got this beautiful syncopation, punctuation. There's a bit of you should never say syncopation, punctuation in the same sentence, could you guys? All right, a bit of alliteration there almost. But it's, yeah, it's punctuated by this sort of heavy, you know, Powell's sticks hit hard in this song, and Naomi's guitars lead slowly and inevitably marching on like the changing of the seasons into this cold and furious guitar solo at the end. It's got Murray's steadfast rhythm bass, you know, that I believe if I'm rightly saying that, I've got to double check this, let me just check, guys, but I think that, yes, it's not written down, but I think I read that Geezer Butler played a bit on this one, possibly. But it ends that with this Nightwing, so, you know, about demons of the night, and I close my eyes and listen to the song. I listened to last night in bed, I couldn't sleep, and all I could hear was, in my vision in my head, was I could see castles and smoke. And if you remember, if you haven't seen the video for Headless Cross, it's very much like that. Lots of dry ice, lots of white lights behind the drum kits, lots of posturing. That's how I felt, so I feel with this particular song. And it's the best way to end the album, because it's just like the opening song. It's a brilliant bookend. A little bit longer, a little bit more dramatic. Could have been a good single, I think, actually. I think they chose Headless Cross, and that's a great single as well, and To Devil a Daughter. But I think this makes a great... I know I had the single. I had it on Headless Cross and To Devil a Daughter. I had the 7-inch version, black vinyl, grey vinyl, picture disc, cassette single, 12-inch, an album. I had them all. I don't own them anymore. I went through a phase back in the... when I lost the Headless Cross, I also went through a phase where I just was giving away things. And when we emigrated to Australia, I left a load there thinking I'd come and get them or someone move them on. And I never really dealt with it. And I think that some of the regrets I have, I left a lot of Iron Maiden stuff there as well when I think about it. Very sad day, stupid day, really. But not stupid. At the time, it was the right thing to do. Anyway, I digress. The end album is now ended. It is a beautiful album that will... My summing up. I'm going to give you a quick sum up, right? I've got 6 minutes left. I'm going to give you my sum up. My summation for this album. I'm too close to it to see any of its faults. You may not be. And so you could probably see some things that aren't right. I know that it's mixed a bit thickly, a bit stodgily. I know that it sometimes is a bit thin in some of the sounding, the vocal recordings. I know that it's stylistically the same from song one to the end, which I find is a bonus because it's my progginess in me. I know that it didn't capture the imagination. It wasn't heavy enough for the time that it was released. If you think about it, 1989, 1990, you've got your Metallicas and your Slayers and things like that are coming about, and things getting heavy, and there's stuff in Norway going on, and Burzum and Mayhem and all that stuff is happening, and it's becoming heavier and heavier, and it has sometimes a sense of old man rock and roll to it. That's me being subjective as best I can. I still think that it's Sabbath's greatest album that isn't an Aussie album. I know that you're going to say Heaven and Hell, and I absolutely told you last week that I love it, and it's a stonker of an album, but this for me is Sabbath all over that it isn't Aussie. It really is. It is a vocalist, a great and wonderful and a beautiful human being at his best vocal performance is on this album, followed very quickly by Tear. And, you know, he was wonderful on Eternal Idol, but this is just like, yeah, it's a sweet spot. It's Iommi settling in with a band that he's the only member of. He'd made Lone Star, which was an atrocious album. He didn't want to be under Sabbath, but they released it under Sabbath. It's really an Iommi solo album. You know, the band had been up and down and been in and out, and could never really shake off the shadows of Dio and Ozzy. They'd had a few, you know, stabs at it with Gillan and people like that, but it didn't work. They didn't gel. Their egos. And this is the thing. This is what's wonderful, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. What is wonderful about Tony Martin as a singer, he doesn't have the ego. He didn't come to the band going, "I'm Dio, I'm Gillan, you know, you'll play my music. I'm just you're helping me," when it's the other fucking way around, right? And Tony doesn't come with that. In all the albums he did, you know, he never had that. He didn't come with that. It was very much like the way that poor bugger Blaze Bailey got crucified, and I was one of them, with Maiden, right? We all wanted, not Ozzy, it's not Ozzy, it's not Bruce, it's not Bruce, blah, 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 blah. It's not Dio, it's not Dio. And, you know, we miss the wood for the trees. Yeah, we can't see what's in front of us. And people like Dio and Gillan, their egos were too big. Great vocalists, wonderful, best, you know, they're in that pantheon, aren't they? But really, when you come to a band with a guitarist as gifted and as iconic as Tony Iommi is, and with Geezer Butler and Bill Ward, just to say that, with Dio and Gillan, you don't fuck around, do you? You don't go in there and try and change it. Turn up, say, "What do you want me to do? Yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir. I'll add my mark, I'll make my moment, but I'm not going to change things, because this is this formula, this spirit in a bottle, this lightning in a jar, this mercurial moment in musical history works. And so we should keep it that way." And I think that's probably one of my concerns, dislikes for the Aussie, the Dio era, some of the Dio era stuff, is that, you know, come out in the press and badmouth your predecessors. It's just not good squishy, man. It's just not good squishy. Anyway, so summing up, my favourite album. I hope you love it. I think it's an absolute bloody cracker of an album. If you can get a copy, if you've got a copy, you lucky bastards. You're honestly, fuck. This will wait for the reissue, because when it comes out, I'm having it on every format possible and in every shape, size and colour. And I will then probably do a re-look at this and just see if I think the sound's only different. I probably highly doubt it. Am I being rose-tinted? Possibly. Am I allowed to be? Yes. I think everyone should have those moments in those albums. And I think if everyone thinks you're going to be subjective all the time, then you're obviously clearly, you haven't got a romantic bone in your body, or you're too analytical. Anyway, reach out. It is on YouTube. I have found it. I had to listen to it on YouTube. The sound isn't great. You can't track by track. You have to just, there is a breakdown of the tracks and their timings on the one that I was looking at. I might put the link in if I can find it. I just don't want to get the show in trouble, but we'll see. I'll put the link to the Tony Martin interview. Please reach, go and watch it. I love doing it. It was an hour long. I was told to do 15 minutes and Tony wanted to talk for an hour. Am I going to say no to him? No. Did I look like a bit of a sycophant sometimes? Yes. Was I a skittish young boy again? Yes. But isn't that a wonderful thing? Anyway, I've chatted on for too long. I've taken too much of your time. Go listen to the album. Next week's one is going to be, I'm not quite sure yet, it's up in the air, but I will think of it. I am thinking, my darling wife did say, let's do cover versions of the best and the worst, so I might do that. In fact, that's probably a good idea. I'll do best and worst cover versions. And I've already got a few in my mind, which I know I'm definitely going to talk about. That's me for today. Take it easy, guys. Bye for now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.